Koyim, welcome everyone. The number 32 in a series of 1,000 lectures on successful parenting of teenagers. You know, ancient times were a lot different than modern times. In ancient times, fathers used to be the rebbeim of their children. Every father taught his child Torah. There always were yeshivas, such as the Academy of Shein Ve'Ever, throughout history, but the institutionalization of yeshivas as an integral component of our community began much later, in the days of Yehoshua ben Gamla, the Kohen Gadol, who made a decree that every town and village where Frum Yidden live must have a yeshiva for their population. Compulsory education in the Frum community began in the days of Yehoshua ben Gamla, the Kohen Gadol. It's been a long time since then, and parents nowadays sometimes tend to rely too much on the yeshiva to instill within their children a love for Yiddishkeit, proper hashkafas, expertise in Torah knowledge, and general Yiras Shamayim. Of course, with the tuitions that they're paying, you sometimes can't blame them for relying on the yeshivas to do that. But the truth is that no matter how good your sons or daughters' yeshivas are, and no matter how wonderful the rebbeim or the teachers are, there is a lot of chinuch that needs to be performed in the home. In Project Rejuvenation, we find that in the vast majority of cases of wayward and rebellious youth, there were problems in the home. There was a short circuit in the domestic dynamics. Perhaps a shalom bayis problem among the parents. Perhaps a shalom bayis problem between the parents and the child or children. But although bad experiences in school can lead children astray, most children who have been led astray have had bad experiences at home, which induced their rebelliousness. Now, in an out-of-town community where you find a broad spectrum of different types of Orthodox Jews, the job of the parents is all that more serious. Because in a place like Borough Park or Williamsburg, you can be reasonably certain that the hashkafas of the yeshiva that you send your children to are the same hashkafas that you have at home. And if the hashkafas of your child's yeshiva are not yours, you send them to another yeshiva where they do have hashkafas more to your liking. If the curriculum in your child's yeshiva is not to your liking, you will try to find another yeshiva where they have a more acceptable one. If you live in a neighborhood where most of the Frumma Yidden are like you, the chances are that the yeshivas of that neighborhood, that cater to the children in that neighborhood, share your vision of what a Ben Torah ought to be. In a place like Miami, Florida, you don't have that. Over there, because there is such a broad spectrum of Orthodox Jews, with so many different standards of what Orthodox Jewry ought to be, with so many different ideas of what a Ben Torah is, the small amount of yeshivas and Beis Yankivs that exist must, of necessity, cater to a broad spectrum of different hashkafas, meaning a broad spectrum of students that come from homes with different hashkafas, and different levels and standards of Yiddishkeit. This being the case, well, you know that different groups of people have to be treated differently chinuch-wise. If I'm speaking in Lakewood, or if I'm speaking in Bnei Brak, I can say certain things that I can't say in Scarsdale, and vice versa. If you're in Kirov and you're making a Shabbaton for Russian high school boys, the Divrei Torah at the Shabbos table will be different than if, let's say, you were making a Shabbaton for graduates, alumni of the Brisky Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And so, when you have a yeshiva where in one classroom you have people who perhaps one day will be graduates of the Brisky Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and you have people sitting in the same classroom who are of a far different persuasion, Frumkeit-wise, you're going to have to find, no matter how skilled a mechanech you are, a way to be able to educate and be mechanech all of your students to the maximum potential of each and every one. Of course, the Rebbe has his own hashkafa, and the school has their own hashkafa, and they're going to try to instill that within their student body. However, as I said, when dealing with different clientele, you have to be mechanech with different approaches. And no matter what your personal hashkafa is, meaning no matter what the Rebbe's hashkafa is, or whatever the school's hashkafa is, they must, out of necessity, use an approach that's going to be effective with their clientele. And if the clientele is mixed, then what's going to happen is that the approach that's used in the school may not be the approach that your child would experience had he been in a school where all the other students in his classroom share his particular standards of Yiddishkeit. Your daughter may not be educated with the same approach that she would had you lived in a neighborhood where all the girls, all the families, are of your particular hashkafa. And so in such a case, it's up to the parents to be able to focus and direct their children much more so than in the homogeneous neighborhoods, in the homogeneous communities, so that their child will be able to go in the derech that they, the parents, want. So although in every community, no matter how homogeneous it is, the parents cannot rely totally on the yeshivas for the chinuch of their children, but they must also participate in it as well. And this does not mean to suggest any criticism against the yeshivas. No matter how wonderful the yeshivas are, the parents still must participate in the child's chinuch if the child is to get a whole chinuch. And no matter how true it is in homogeneous communities, in a community like Miami, where there is a broad spectrum of orthodoxy, it's even more so. Parents must take an even more active role in the child's chinuch and rely less on the yeshivas to be able to do it. And again, this is not a criticism on the yeshivas. And not only is it not a criticism on the yeshivas, it applies to the neighborhood as a whole besides to the yeshivas. In other words, if I live in a neighborhood like Bnei Brak, or I live in a neighborhood like Mea Shearim, and I have my child play with their neighbors, I can safely assume that the neighbors' children share the same hashkafas that my children do, because the neighborhood is basically homogeneous. Now, I'm not saying that in a place like Mea Shearim or Williamsburg or Bnei Brak, there cannot be neighbors that are bad influences for my children. That's not so. The point is, though, that my child will grow up with a consistent standard of Yiddishkeit consistent environment that contains basically one general standard of Yiddishkeit, one general version of Frumkeit, one general vision of what successful Ben Torah is supposed to be, as opposed to other places where the child will be bombarded with different messages of this is how a Frum family lives. That's how a Frum family lives. Well, that's how the other Frum family lives. All the families are Frum, but they all live differently. So what is Frumkeit? Who's right and who's wrong? Or is nobody right or wrong? These are issues that exist in communities with a broad spectrum of Orthodox Jews, with broad spectrum of standards. And therefore, parents in such places have to take the bull by the horns and grab the chinuch of their children firmly to direct it and guide it in one consistent direction. Now, in such places, parents are often very scared to teach their children what they actually believe is right. And this is true for many reasons. Perhaps they're afraid that considering the environment that the child is growing up in, if the mother tells the child that she's not allowed to do this, or that such and such is wrong, the child will laugh. And out of fear that the child will laugh, the mother won't give this message to the child. Like the Chazal were afraid in the Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says over there, it's a memra from Rav Yehuda. It says that the pumpkin, it has two parts. The soft part of a pumpkin, you should eat it with beets. The soft part of certain seeds should be eaten with something called kuta. This is for health reasons. And then the Gemara says, don't tell this to the Amharets. And Tosis explains, because the Amharets will laugh. The Amharets won't accept it and he's going to laugh. So if he's not going to accept it and he's only going to laugh, don't tell it to him. Parents in out-of-town communities often find, or they often are concerned that their children will laugh when they give them the message. So they just refrain from giving it. Other times parents may be afraid that the child will look down on their neighbors if they do accept the message. Let's assume that you don't want your daughter to go to the movies. And all the neighbors' daughters are going to the movies. The child may laugh. And even if she doesn't laugh, even if she accepts it, she may grow into this pseudo-kanoi, this holier-than-thou personality who looks down on all the neighbors as apikarsim or kaifrim because they do go to the movies and she doesn't. Parents don't want that either. Perhaps it's just the opposite. Perhaps you're afraid that if you give your child a certain leniency that their neighbors don't have, that they will misuse what you told them and go overboard with the leniency in ways that you never intended. And sometimes it's hard to know what to say and what not to say. Sometimes it's hard to know how far to push and how far not to push. When to put your foot down, when to be strict, when to be lenient. When should the child be forced or induced to act differently than the rest of their peers, and when do you turn the other cheek? The shaila of what to say and what not to say has always been a difficult one. To the point where the Chazal as a whole were not always 100% certain themselves what would be misused and what wouldn't. The Gemara Nedarim, as I said, tells us not to tell a certain piece of information to the Amhay Aretz, because according to Tosfos, they're going to laugh at it. The Gemara in Menachos describes a machloikis about a certain piece of information. Although everybody agrees the information is true, it's a halacha, although everybody agrees the halacha is true, there's a machloikis whether or not you should tell it to an ignoramus, to an amhoris. The Gemara is in Menachos Daf Tzadites Amud Beis, Am Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Ben Yehoi Tzedek. Afilu loikara odom, elo kriyas shma shachris viarvis. If a person's entire learning schedule for the day consists of nothing but his saying of the Shema in the morning and in the evening, says the Gemara, although obviously he's not going to grow into a big Talmud Chacham, Kayin, the person fulfills La Yomush, which is the mitzvah that obligates us to learn day and night, Kviyas Itim La Taira. Since he said Shema in the day and Shema in the night, he fulfilled that halacha, and he needs not feel obligated to add any more siddurim to his day. And the Gemara continues, "V'davar zeh osur lo oimrei b'fnei amei ha'aretz." This halacha is prohibited to tell to ignorami, obviously, because they're going to take advantage of it and learn less, because they know this is true. But then the Gemara says, "Varava Omar, no, not only is it permitted to tell this to an Amharetz, mitzvah loimroi b'fnei Amharetz, it's a mitzvah to tell it to all the ignorami," says Rashi, because the ignorami will listen and they'll say, "Hey, well, if I can fulfill a whole mitzvah of Talmud Torah just by saying Krishma, imagine how much reward I can get if I learn more. Imagine how much reward I can get if I learn the whole day, if this is the reward for somebody that just says one Krishma in the morning and one Krishma in the evening. Kalvachomer ben benoy shel kalvachomer, the reward that I can get if I learn more." So this will encourage them to learn more. So we have a machlokes. The halacha, by the way, is like Rava, and it's a mitzvah to tell this to the Amharetz, but it's a machlokes. It's not so poshut in the Gemara if the Amharetz will take it the right way or they'll take it the wrong way. And so you see that the issue of what to say and what not to say is sometimes very, very difficult. And if in the Gemara there's a machloikis, just imagine sometimes the confusion that parents experience when they have a certain halacha or a certain hanhaga, a certain behavior, a certain hashkafa that they want to tell their children, but they're not sure if it'll be counterproductive, perhaps encouraging. Well, obviously in such a case, it's good to ask a Sheilas Chacham, but the Chacham may not always be able to help you. Reason being, because the Chacham may not know your particular child as well as you. You can come to a Rav with a Shaila, a medical Shaila, let's say, if you're a doctor, and in order for the Rav to answer the Shaila, he has to understand the patient's condition. It's not always easy to explain to a Rav the condition of your child to the point where he'll be able to know if a certain hanhaga would be advantageous or detrimental. And so, it's very important for parents to be able to understand how to deal with such a situation. And the solution to the situation, I believe, is contained in a medrash. It's a medrash in a few places. And I'm reading from the Koheles Rabbah. Reb Shmuel v'Reb Yitzchak. Reb Shmuel v'Reb Yitzchak said, "Bikshu Chachomim lignoiz Sefer Koheles." The Chachomim, the Chazal, wanted to hide the book of Koheles, book that was written by Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men. The Chazal wanted to hide it. Yidei Shemotzu boi Dvarim Shematin Letzad Minus. Because they found things that people will misconstrue, things that are similar to apikursis, and it'll be counterproductive. What do they find that's similar to apikursis? Hach Omar Shloima, so says Shloima HaMelech, Samach Bochur Bochur B'Yalduzecha, V'Yetivcha Libcha B'Mei Bechuraisecha, V'Haleich B'Darchei Libecha, Ubimare Einecho. Rejoice, you young man, in your youth, and let your heart make you glad. follow the ways of your heart and follow the vision of your eyes. Moshe Omar, but Moshe Rabbeinu said, do not follow after your heart and after the vision of your eyes. Shlomo HaMelech Omar, Shlomo HaMelech said, you should do it. So Shlomo HaMelech is contradicting what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Lez din v'lez dayan. Because of this, the Chazal figured that even the words of Shlomo HaMelech can have an undesirable effect. But the Medrash continues. Kevon Shiyomar, since Shlomo HaMelech continues and says, V'da, and young man, you have to know, ki al kol elo yaviyecho ha'elokim ba'mishpat, that on all of the above, on all the times you followed your eyes and your heart, Hashem will make sure to judge you for it. In other words, if you do what you want, you will have to pay a price. Omru, the Chazal said, Yofa Omar Shloima. Shloima HaMelech, what he said was good. Now you see from here an amazing thing. First of all, that even the Chacham Mikol Odom, the word Shloima HaMelech, even his words, sometimes may have an undesirable effect. In this particular case, the Chazal saw that they wouldn't have an undesirable effect. Since he continued and he explained the whole story, he said, "Da ki al kol elo yaviyecho elokim ba'mishpat." So they said, "Yofa Omar Shloima." Shloima HaMelech said, "Good." Now there was never a havamin in the Medrash that Shloima HaMelech said something that was wrong, that something was against Moshe Rabbeinu. Shlomo HaMelech was Chochem Mikol Odom. To say that Shlomo HaMelech spouted Apikursus would contradict so many things in Psukim and Tanakh, where we know that Shlomo HaMelech was anything but an Apikurus. Rather, Yofa Omar Shlomo means it's good that Shlomo HaMelech said it. There are some things that, although they're true, are better left unsaid, like we see from the Gemara. Unsaid to certain people, and maybe even unsaid to everybody. Certainly unsaid to the Hamaynam. However, Shlomo HaMelech didn't leave us with just half of a thought. He didn't just leave us with the first part of the statement where he says, go follow your heart. Shlomo HaMelech explained. He says, on one hand, I'm saying go follow your heart. On the other hand, you have to realize that Hashem will bring you to Mishpat. And then Yofa Omar Shloima, it's good that Shloima HaMelech said it. Not that what he said is good. We always knew what he said was good. But it's good that he said it. And so the Medrash is telling us, if there's something that's maybe detrimental in its being publicized, in order to make it Yofa, in order to make it good to say, we have to say the whole story. We have to make sure that we're not saying just half of an idea or part of an idea, although that part of the idea may be true. We have to give a balance between one and the other. In other words, in the Gemara, where it says that that it's prohibited to tell an Amharit that he can fulfill the mitzvah of Shema by Shachris and Arvis, what would be the halacha, according to that man, the Amar, if you would say to the Amharet, you can fulfill Talmud Torah with Kriya Shema, Shachris, and Arvis, but you have to know that if you could fulfill a mitzvah of Talmud Torah with just Shema, Alachas Kama Vakama, just imagine, Amharet, how great reward you could obtain by learning more. If you would say that whole thing, perhaps everybody, all the shitas in the Gemara would agree that that's permitted, or a mitzvah to tell the Amharets even. And the only machloikis is only if you tell them that statement that you can be yoitzu with Shema morning and night, v'suloy, and no more. But who says there'll be a machloikis if you explain it to him in its entirety? And so this is the answer. Very often when parents have a difficult time deciding whether or not to tell something to a child, because perhaps they'll think that the child will look down on the neighbor or the child will laugh, you can solve that dilemma by just explaining things a little further. In other words, if you teach your child not to do a certain thing that everybody else is doing, you have to balance that out with lessons to your child about v'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha. And just because the neighbor is doing something that they should not do, that doesn't mean that you ought to look down on them. By balancing the hashkafa, by completing it, you can solve your dilemma. You'll be able to be mechanech your child the way you want without the side effects. Now, the first thing we have to know is that the worst enemy of a teenager is confusion. A confused child is a vulnerable child. A child that sees different standards of Yiddishkeit and doesn't understand right ones from wrong ones, and accurate from inaccurate, mistakes from reality. They grow up confused, and they develop this attitude that, well, it's up to me to decide what's right and what's wrong. I don't need a rabbi. I don't need a teacher to tell me what I can and cannot do. I can decide on my own. Everybody's deciding on their own. So can I. So the first thing is that it's very, very important to be very, very accurate with your child. Be very precise. There's a story I remember where a principal of a seminary in New York came to me and he asked me information about a girl in my neighborhood who he thought I may know. Happens to be I did know her. In fact, I was her teacher when she was a senior in high school. The reason why he asked me about her was because at the entrance interview for the seminary, he asked the girl some question about her attitude towards, I'm not sure, either movies or Bobby socks or talking to boys, something like that. And she answered something to the effect of, well, I think everybody should make up their own decisions, their own minds about this. That was a red flag in the eyes of the principal, in the eyes of the dean, and that motivated him to inquire further. So he asked me what I think of the girl's Yiddishkeit, or what I know about it. And I asked him, I said, Principal, I want to ask you something. You live in Borough Park. This girl lives in Far Rockaway. Far Rockaway, we have girls who go to the movies who live next to girls that don't. Girls that wear Bobby socks and no stockings next to girls that wouldn't do that. How would you answer your daughter if your daughter comes to you and says, Father, why am I not allowed to wear Bobby socks, but the next door neighbor who's from, whose father goes to shul 3 times a day and learns his daf yomi, whose mother covers her hair, and whose children go to the same schools and yeshivas as we do, does wear Bobby socks? Why can I not and they can? Why would you tell her? Oh, principal tells me that he would tell her that this is like gebrochts. Some people eat gebrochts on Pesach, but other people can't. And those that can't are prohibited to do it, even though the next door neighbor may be eating knedlach. For you is also to eat knedlach. And everybody follows their own minig. So I told him that that's precisely what the girl answered you when she said she thinks everybody ought to make up their own mind. She meant that everybody should follow their own family standards, or their own standards, which is a very big error. It's a mistake to tell a child that movies or Bobby socks is like a brochts. Something like that is either permitted or prohibited, or l'chadchilo or b'diyevit, but whatever the case is, you should not avoid the reality, you should not avoid accuracy by trying to make it more palatable to the child. The reason is because if the child grew up and decided to marry somebody who's minhagim are different than yours, let's say she decided to marry somebody who eats gebrochts and you don't, so you may not mind. But if she decides to marry somebody with different standards of Yiddishkeit, you're going to be upset that she's lowering her standards. Yet you taught her that it's not a lower standard, but rather a different custom. You made your job easier. You avoided the difficult task of explaining reality to a child by sugarcoating it in an outer trapping of sheker. Yaakov Kamenetsky has a parish on Pirkei Avos. And on the Mishnah Loyam Haaretz Chosid, that an ignoramus, somebody that doesn't know Torah, cannot be frum. He asks, why can't he be frum? Why doesn't he just follow what all other Erlecha Yidden, what all other good Jews are doing? And then he'll know what to do, even though he's not a scholar. And Rabbi Yaakov answers that it's not enough to follow what every other good Jew is doing in your vicinity. Why? He says, for instance, there are two minhagim regarding whether we wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin. In some communities, they don't wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin, or they didn't wear, and in other communities, they did. The reason why certain communities did not wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin was because the Rabbonim in those communities, the leaders of the communities, felt that the Balabatim in those communities needed more of a feeling for the Avelus of the Bein HaMetzarim. They needed to feel the Churban a little more. So they told them, even on Shabbos, you should not wear Shabbos clothes. In other communities, feeling the Avelus of the Churban was not the problem. It was just the opposite. They felt Avelus of the Churban perhaps too much. They were downtrodden Jews. They were poor. They were suffering. Rabbonim needed to give them a lift. And they said, when Shabbos comes, you must wear Shabbos clothes. You must dress your best, even on Shabbos Chazoin. And so each Kehillah had a legitimate and good reason for their custom. Now, let's say you have an Am Haaretz that lived in the community where they did not wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin. And he's an Am Haaretz, he doesn't understand the reason, he doesn't understand even that it's a minig. He just knows that this is the right thing to do. And he goes and he meets somebody later on in life from the other community where they do wear Shabbos clothes. He will mistakenly think that the other person is doing an Aveira. He will mistakenly judge his neighbor for somebody who is bemazed, somebody who is willingly and knowingly violating the Torah, because he knows that the frum yidden do not wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin, and vice versa. If you have somebody that always, all his life, knew that you're supposed to wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazoin, and he sees somebody that wears weekday clothes, he'll look at him like somebody who's wearing weekday clothes on Shabbos, which will be wrong. In other words, not only do you have to know what is right and wrong, but you have to know why, Rabbi Yankov says. You have to know that what you're doing is only a minig, it's not a mitzvah deraisa or mitzvah derabbanon. You have to know that it is community sensitive and not absolute across the board. You have to understand why you're doing something. You have to know if it's a deraisa or a derabbanon. You have to know if it's a minig or a halacha. If you don't know all these details, you're going to come to be mekel bein odom lechaveroi. You're going to come to make terrible mistakes, terrible judgment errors, and loyam haaretz chosid. It's the same thing with our children. When we tell our children a halacha, we have to make them understand the severity of the halacha. We have to make them understand the why. We have to make them understand precisely what we're trying to tell them. If you want to teach your daughter or your son that they ought not go to the movies, then what you must do is take out the svarim, but from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and go down to the Tshuvas Igaris Moshe and teach them, look, this is why I don't want you to go to the movies, because I hold it is prohibited. And this is why I believe it is prohibited. If you want to teach your son that he ought not speak to girls, then you must open Sfarim and show him with your finger black on white or you don't have to open Svarim, Torah Shebal Peh is good too, but he must be made aware of precisely why he can't do it. Are we talking about a halacha? Are we talking about a minhag? Are we talking about a siyag? Are we talking about an issa deraisa of lo sikrivu legalo serva? Are we talking about just a good hanhaga, a midas chasidus? You must explain it to him. Now, in the introduction to the Sefer Chedushei Reb Shlomo Hyman al Hashas, it's brought over there that Reb Shlomo Hyman said that if you're a teacher in a class and a student asks you a question, he asks you a kasha on the Gemara, and the kasha is a shtus, the question doesn't start. The question is an error. It's based on a fallacy. And you don't tell him that it's a fallacious question. You say, you know, student, I think I may be able to answer the question, and you give him an answer. You are corrupting your student. You're teaching him that what's a terrible error, a terrible inaccuracy, a terrible mistake, is not really such a mistake. It's a good question. If a child comes up with a good comment in shir, and you minimize or exaggerate the value of that question or comment above or beyond or below or more than or less than it actually is, you are causing your student to veer off from Seichel HaYosha, from the proper path of thought. Rebbe, he says, has to teach his child, his student rather, how great the question is, how strong it is. And he has to weigh with clarity each comment, how accurate it is, how precise it is, how possible it is, how likely it is, how unlikely it is. And that's how we teach our children Torah. He says that Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that great goyin and tzaddik, when he would ask a question in his svarim, and he would, well, very often Rabbi Akiva Eiger would ask a question and he wouldn't know the answer. So he just doesn't leave it with a question. He has a comment after the question that implies, indicates that he doesn't have an answer. But he has a lot of different types of comments that he uses to indicate this. Sometimes he'll write tzorach iyun. Sometimes, I mean, in other words, the question needs more analysis. Sometimes he'll write Tzorach Iyun Gadol. It needs a lot more analysis. Hashem Yo'ar Einai is another one of his. It means it's a prayer to Hashem that Hashem should enlighten him to figure out the answer to the question. Another time Rabbi Kivegu will write Tzorach Ani Rav L'Rav B'zeh. I need a Rebbe to teach this to me. And Rabbi Shlomo Hyman said that Rabbi Kivegu is not just randomly telling us that he doesn't know the answer. He's telling us how difficult the question is. This question needs analysis. This question needs a lot more analysis. This question, to answer it, you need a Rebbe. Another question, you need pray to Hashem. And we're not talking over there about the difference between halacha and minig, the difference between midas chasidus and something that's necessary. We're talking about the different levels, different precision levels of how difficult a question is to answer. And our Talmidei Chachamim, our Gedolim, were very, very careful, very precise when they taught Torah, that what they're teaching should not be taken for more or for less, with more or less value than it actually has, with more or less severity, with more or less seriousness than it actually contains, actually demands. And so when we teach our children our hashkafis, when we teach our children hanhogis, when we teach our children behavior, it's not merely enough to tell them, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, this is what I want you to do, this is right and this is wrong. That's not good enough. It's never good enough, but in a place where confusion is in the air, where your child will be bombarded with different versions of what frumkeit is, it's all the more imperative to teach our children with precision accuracy and to show them in svarim or to teach them precisely what it is we want from them, why and how desperately we want it. This is a minig, and therefore we have to follow the minig. This is a midas chasidus. This is just a good thing to do. This is something that a baal nefesh ought to fulfill. This is a mitzvah deraisa. This is an iser chayvei krisus. And let me show you why I believe that. Let me tell you why. It's not that parents owe a child. It's not that parents need to defend themselves, to defend their standards to their children. You're not defending your standards to your child. You are handing over your standards to your child. You are explaining them. You are teaching them. You're not defending yourself. You are teaching your children. V'limaritem oisam es b'neichem. It's not your standard, it's their standard. You believe this is the truth. This is the standard that you want your child to grow up with. He needs to understand it. Don't tell your daughter, well, your neighbors may be doing this, but we don't do it in our house, and as long as you're in our house, you're not going to do it. That's not the right thing to say. Because, number one, that implies that there is no intrinsically important reason to do this. Rather, this is the rule of the house. When you leave the house, when you grow up, you can make your own decisions and do what you want. You wouldn't tell her that about Shabbos, would you? I hope not. The reason why a child keeps Shabbos is not because she's in your house. It's because Hashem told her you have to keep Shabbos. If a tzorach iyun has to be explained as a tzorach iyun and not a tzorach iyun gadol, so halacha or hanhaga have to be explained as such, as opposed to just domestic preference. Imagine telling your son, son, if you want to go murder people, you want to steal after you leave this house, go right ahead. But as long as you're in this house, you're going to follow the rules of the house. And one of the rules of the house is that we don't steal. Do you think that's a good way to bring up children? Now, the only reason why a parent may want to get away with that is because the child knows that his parent is being cynical and sarcastic. But what if the child would really believe that this is stealing? Morality is a rule of the house with no intrinsic value. It would be a terrible thing to say. And when a parent tells a child that this halacha or this standard of Yiddishkeit is the rule of the house and you can make your own rules when you grow up, well, if you really believe that, that it's a rule of the house, then that's what you ought to say. But if you believe that this is the right thing, that this is the Torah-dika thing, that this is the halacha, that this is what they should do or have to do, then that's what you must tell them. The only thing is that you have to balance this out with the whole story. You have to balance it out with a healthy dose of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamoicha on how to get along with your neighbors that do not fulfill this standard. If you think your neighbors are doing wrong, then you tell your child what the neighbor's doing is wrong. It's Shaloi Kedin. It's Osir. The neighbor is doing wrong. We hold it's wrong. The neighbor is merely exhibiting a different minhag than you have, then that's what you should tell your children. If the neighbor is violating the Torah, then you should tell that to your children as well. Now, how are you going to prevent people? Don't judge him even l'kaf schus. Don't think about what he's doing. It's not your business. You're not mechuyev to think about, you're not mechuyev to judge him. You're mechuyev not to. You should not judge him. Unless it's nageya to you, until you end up in his place, meaning until you end up in his territory, and for whatever reason it's relevant for you to judge him. Maybe you have to bring him to a din Torah or whatever. If it's not nageya you, if you don't have to judge him, don't. He's a yid. He's not a rasha. If he's a rasha, you should have nothing to do with him. But if he doesn't, is he not considered a Rasha? Then don't judge him at all. It's not your business. That doesn't mean to accept what they're doing is right. means to separate the action from the person. We have to teach our children what actions are wrong and how wrong they are, no matter what. If somebody is committing a wrong action, we don't know, we're not interested. We're not interested in the reason. Perhaps they're simply mistaken. Perhaps they were brought up wrong. Perhaps they are real evildoers. We don't know, we don't care. Even if we can know, we don't care. It doesn't matter. Teach them not to judge. Not judging a person does not mean that you have to look away, you have to accept what they're doing as proper, or accept what they're doing as a alternative mode of Judaism, a legitimate mode of Judaism. The mode of Judaism is certainly illegitimate, but we're not interested in judging people. That dichotomy is the Yafa Omar, the balance between teaching your children right and wrong standards of Yiddishkeit, and on the other hand teaching them to accept people as Yiddin. Teach them the halachos and the philosophy on the mitzvah of Teichacha. Teach them where they're not mechuyev to say anything. Teach them that just because another Yid is not perfect doesn't mean he's a Rasha. Teach them that nobody's perfect. Teach them everybody makes mistakes. Teach them not to judge. You need this. It's necessary in order to alleviate the side effects of teaching them accurate Torah standards. It's like medicine. Guy takes a pill, the pill has a side effect, so you need another pill to deal with the side effects of the first one. You give them good Torah, it can sometimes have side effects. The child may get a Yetzirah to judge others. They need more Torah to negate those side effects. Just like Shlomo HaMelech said, Smach Bochor B'Yaldei Secha, that generated a side effect, but he needed to say, V'da'ak Yal Kalela Yevi'echa Hashem B'Mishpat, to negate the side effect. You can't teach a kid half of Torah. You have to teach him the entire concept, the entire behavior that he must have, the entire attitude. Now, sometimes a parent is going to encounter a situation where a child will come home from school and the teacher will make a mistake. One parent told me that their daughter came home from school one day and the teacher in school taught the class that it is obligatory for girls to light the Hanukkah candles at home. Not that women are obligated in the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles. That's a different story. But that they must actually light together with the brothers and the father and the men in the family. Now, in some families, women light Hanukkah candles, and in some families, they don't. Even when they don't, it doesn't mean to say that they're not obligated in the mitzvah, but rather that they're yotze with the men's lighting. In some families, they light on their own. And this teacher said that women are obligated to light, and if they don't light, they get an aveira. Now, the fact is that in many homes of great Gedolei Yisrael, there are women that did not light Hanukkah candles. It's a fact. And there are reasons for it. If you want, you can look in the Chasam Sofer for a very interesting one. But that's a fact. Now, what does a parent do if a child comes home and the child is taught the standard of Yiddishkeit that runs contrary to what they're being taught at home? And what they're being taught at home is legitimate. Well, what the father ought to do is to listen carefully to what the child says, accept it as a call to reflect upon what you're doing at home. In other words, girl comes home and says, the teacher said that women have to light Hanukkah candles at home. The father should say, really? We never had women lighting Hanukkah candles at home. Let's see. Open up your Shulchan Aruch. Call your Rav. Try to find out and inquire in an honest and objective manner. At worst, you find out that perhaps what you were doing all your life is wrong. And that could happen. Happens a lot. People find out that what they've been doing all their life is wrong. And you'll change. But if you find out, and even if you know, show your child that you're willing to be open-minded and you're willing to find out, and that when where Torah is concerned, honesty and objectivity is all important to you. You tell your child, look, in our family, women never lit Hanukkah candles. Your teacher says that what we've done is wrong all our lives. Let's see. Call your Rav, ask, find out. And then when you do find out that the teacher was wrong, write a letter to the teacher. Write a letter to the teacher saying, teacher, my daughter came home, Rachela came home with this and this information. Check out this and this source. Thank you very much. Signed, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Rabbi or Dr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Show your children that you're open-minded. Show your children that finding the truth is important to you. And show your children that it's possible for anybody to make a mistake. It's not a problem to tell your children that their teacher was wrong. If you can avoid doing it, then that's a different story. But if the teacher said something that's blatantly wrong, your children ought to know that it's possible for anybody to make a mistake. And that Torah is objective, and that Torah has truth. And that if the teacher made a mistake, the teacher's human and the teacher made a mistake. But what the teacher says should be taken seriously. I was told that my Rebbe once made a mistake. When I was in 11th grade, my Rebbe said something and I had a question about it, and I had called then Rav Avigdor Miller. And you know what he told me? He said, what your Rebbe said is wrong. He said, your Rebbe made a mistake. It's not so, what he said. I didn't lose respect for my Rebbe, because I knew that where Torah is concerned, where everything in the world is concerned, actually, but everybody's human. Everybody can make a mistake. Rather than trying to hide, teaching your children that you have to hide mistakes, that an authority is perfect, and that they can never make mistakes, and that they can never make honest mistakes, and that your child is going to know that there's a mistake made over here. Your child needs to see honesty and objectivity. I remember once my daughter did a report for school. She was, I believe, in sixth grade for a history report, I think it was. History. And by us, we don't write the Goyish year, let's say 1996. We don't write it out in full. The Maram Shik, the Chasam Sofer, say you can't do it, not to do it, so we don't do it. We write either apostrophe 96 or apostrophe 996. That's the way I paskin for my Kehillah here. My daughter, when she wrote the report, she didn't put the Goyish dates in. She put the apostrophe in instead of the first digit, instead of the one. 1897 was apostrophe 897. Teacher was a frum woman, and she gave back the paper, and she took off points from my daughter's report because she didn't put in the entire Goyish date. I told her to go to the teacher and tell the teacher that your father, that her father, who happens to be one of the rabbonim in the community, said that she's not allowed to do it. She did, and the teacher said, I never heard of such a thing. No such thing, and she's still taking off points. So I wrote her a letter. I wrote a letter quoting the Maram Shik, quoting the Chasam Sofer. And in no uncertain terms, I told her that what my daughter did was halachically correct, and that actually what she's doing is she's taking off points from my daughter because my daughter's following her religion. And in the United States of America, well, I said, if this was a public school, I'd be able to file a lawsuit for violating my religious rights. And in my religion, my daughter has to write the dates this way. Well, the teacher quickly backed down. And your children need to see that your beliefs and your standards of Yiddishkeit, in a community where there are so many standards of Yiddishkeit, that yours are the result of honesty and objectivity and a real search for the truth. Perhaps when your children grow up, they're going to end up disagreeing with you. Maybe your son will become such a big Talmud Chacham that he's going to decide that certain things that he grew up with in his home were wrong. But he'll never disrespect what you do, and he'll never look down on you if he knows that whatever standards were kept in the home that he grew up were determined honestly, with integrity, with objectivity, and with an open-mindedness. But once those standards were determined, they were inviolable. And that's what children need to know. Together with an Eitzah Tova where this is concerned, a good idea would be for your children to see, to experience other life in other Jewish communities, communities that are perhaps more homogeneous, communities where life is different. It's not great for children to grow up experiencing only the narrow confines of their particular community. Let them go visit other places. Perhaps you have relatives. Perhaps you want to send them away to camp. Perhaps you have other opportunities. Send them to communities where standards of Yiddishkeit are less confusing. Let them see that the way they live is just symptomatic of their particular community. And it's not absolute. It will help them. It will help them survive in the community if they understand that sometimes being different from the rest of the community is, well, that there are many, many people all over the country that are actually like you, that share your particular standards, even if they're not your next door neighbors. And it's good for them in general to see the way other Yidden live. And of course, I'm not saying you should send them to places where there's going to be terrible influences. I'm not telling you to send them to Sodom or any reasonable facsimile thereof. I'm talking about legitimate communities that live their life differently. Each community has their own issues, their own problems, their own strengths and weaknesses. And to get a perspective, if you have a kid, to get a more accurate perspective of the way Orthodox life can be lived, they really ought to see more than just their community, really ought to experience it. So to sum up, the idea is that in a heterogeneous community, in order to be able to instill within your child your particular standard of Yiddishkeit, you have to be able to convey the message to the child that your standard of Yiddishkeit, well, it doesn't have to be holier than thou, but it has to be the result of honest truth-seeking, the result of seeking the true Das Torah, of open-mindedness, of objectivity. And once the standard is set, it's not broken. The trick is not only to give the truth and the whole, not only to give the truth and nothing but the truth, but to give the whole truth as well. Teach your children not to judge others. Teach your children, yes, that I'm telling you to do this because this is right, if that's the case. I'm telling you to do this because this is our minhag, if that's the case. And what somebody else is doing is their minhag, if that's the case, or what somebody else is doing is just wrong. But that person is a tzelem elokim, and that person is a yid, and the ahavta l'reacha kamoicha applies to them as well, regardless. And then, no matter what standards your children decide on, when they grow up, after they get married, what their rebbeim teach them, no matter what, they're going to obtain an immovable respect for what you taught them, because what you taught them was done through honesty and objectivity. And that honesty, objectivity, and Ehrlichkeit are the main ingredients when it comes to chinuch.